Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is artist Barbara Page. Page has a Master of Fine Arts from Cornell University. Her oils, watercolors, and mixed media have been exhibited in galleries and museums in New York, Boston, Philadelphia, California, Italy, and Germany. Her highly acclaimed series of 544 paintings, Rock of Ages, Sands of Time, which depicts the history of life, was permanently installed at the Museum of the Earth in Ithaca, New York, in 2003. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Thank you, Tish. It's great to be here.
Now, you've said that it's likely that your choice of a career as an artist has to do with your acute sense of time passing. So talk to us about that.
Well, I think even as a child, I was aware that I wouldn't be in school forever. However, time was really different then. It seemed like the summer took forever to pass, and now everyone who is older talks about how swiftly time passes. And I've often wondered if it's just because when we're young, we have been here for a relatively short period of time, and as we get older, it seems like the time has just flown by, partly because we don't remember very much of the past. And that's one thing I'm really curious about. When we start to think about the past as we get older, and how we perceive it and gather it and recollect it.
Mm-hmm. So do you think your art is a way to try to retrieve it?
Definitely. I think the piece that I did about the Rock of Ages for the Museum of the Earth was more about time than it was about anything else. I wanted to do a piece that portrayed the past not as flat, but with dimensions. A lot of people might think that Jesus Christ and dinosaurs were here at the same time, but I really wanted to show how long it took for man to appear. And now I'm working on a piece that also has to do with my own recollections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do want to talk about that for the end of the show. Now, you also said that you were influenced by natural history. Was this always an interest, or is this something you took up in response to wanting to create art around this idea?
When I was a kid, my mother basically did not want her children in the house because we were going to mess it up. So we were sent out to play all of the time. So I spent my entire childhood running around in the fields, pretending I was a horse. If that's natural history, I don't think so. But but also making gardens, collecting plants, being outdoors. I love to garden, or at least I did until the deer started eating everything.
But yes.
But I just really like the out of doors.
Mm-hmm. And so you did study natural history eventually, right?
No, I...
Not formally, but you read a lot of books about it?
I did read books about it. I originally intended to study classics, but my career in college was cut short by getting married and having kids, so...
Oh, I've heard that story before.
Yeah.
Now, do you have ideas jump out of you and then you run into the studio? Or are you one of those artists that says, I must be in the studio every day and whatever comes, but I must be there working?
I wish I had a chance to be in the studio every day, but certainly the necessities of life make that impossible. Plus, I have to live. I mean, I want to have a lot of experiences to bring to my work. I'm interested in a lot of things. I do a lot of things. I definitely do wake up with an idea in the middle of the night and need to start doing it. But I would say most of the time I start something and I don't really know where it's going, just like this interview. And it takes a long time to take a final form, such as the piece at the Museum of the Earth. That started out as an idea for an artist's book, and it grew into this gigantic albatross.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it kind of depends. Some pieces are done in a matter of hours, and something like the piece at the Museum of the Earth took me 5 years. So it just depends.
Mm-hmm. But you when you do get an idea, you do need you are compelled to go into the studio. I assume. Is it sort of an experiment even at that point?
I think all of my work is an experiment because I don't really know where it's going, and I definitely have way many more ideas than I can actually execute. So I have a sketchbook where I just write down ideas or plans for something in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says in your biography that you've kept a journal for over 20 years with you know, pieces of rock that you found and things that you find and so on. Talk to us about that. How has that helped you as an artist?
This journal started because I went to an artist's colony back in, I think it was about 1982, and there was an artist there who kept a journal, and it was a picture journal, and I was really impressed by the way she recorded her impressions, and so that was my inspiration, and I started it as a picture journal, but then I had separated my journals into a written journal and a picture journal, which was more the ideas, the visual ideas that interested me. And over the years, sometimes I've separated them and sometimes they've come together, but I realized that if I didn't write these things down, I would never remember them. It's just been amazing how much one forgets.
Oh, yeah. And that has to do with the passing of time.
Yes.
That you've been so obsessed with.
Exactly.
Now, do you find that verbalizing things in a journal does translate into art for you?
I would say my journals are not that much about art. I read a lot, and so I write down quotes from books that are meaningful to me. Because I have sketchbooks with ideas in them, I tend to put them in there rather than in my journals. But right now I'm using my journals for a particular piece I'm working on, so mm-hmm. you never can tell.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit more about that very ambitious piece and highly acclaimed, the Rock of Ages, Sands of Time. It took you 5 years, 544 panels. Tell us more about the seed of how that was created.
As I said, I was interested in the passing of time, so I thought one of the things that's very striking about this Finger Lakes region that we live in is the geology. And I was building a studio about 20 years ago. I mean, I personally wasn't building it, but I didn't have any place to work. So I started painting outside and particularly liked working in the gorges because of the rock structure. But I began to wonder what was the history of this area. So I thought I would make an artist's book with pages, layers of rock. I wasn't really too sure how it would evolve, but in order to give a sense of the passage of time, I stumbled into the fossil record. The fossils would give me a sense of time passing. And I knew nothing about geology or paleontology. This was definitely a case of fools walking in where angels fear to tread. I think that's the quote. And I read Stephen Jay Gould's book, Wonderful Life, which laid out the Cambrian period, the earliest period that I cover in this piece, which starts about 540 million years ago. It laid out the fossils. There were reconstructions. Piece of cake. After I finished the Cambrian period, it was like walking off a diving board into a empty pool because I just had no idea where to go from there. So I had to do a lot of research. I went to a lot of museums and I would do the research for a particular section and then do the section because I couldn't possibly retain all of that information.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a paint, research for each of the 11 geological periods.
And how long did it take you to do each panel? Did that vary?
It varied. Some of the panels have very little on them because we don't really know very much about what happened in that particular period, or some of them are quite intricate, so they would take several days to paint. I wouldn't say any of them took more than a week, except that the research for them took so long, so it's really hard to say, but I did work on this solidly, pretty much painting it for 3 years.
That's amazing. Did you skip from different periods, or did you do them all in order?
I actually did.
You would
did.
Stay in the Cambrian or
yeah.
know, skip back to the more modern times? How did you do
I
that?
I started the work on paper,
uh-huh.
And I showed part of it, because of course I never expected to complete it, in a gallery, and Warren Allman, the director of the museum, saw it and said that he wanted it. And of course I thought he was kidding, but a few years later he came to me and said he was going to build a museum, and at that point I started the piece over. because on boards, and I wanted to put bas-relief in as well.
Explain what bas-relief means.
Bas-relief is, in this case, some of the panels, which are hardboard or like masonite, are coated with clay, and then I used paper clay on top of to attach a form such as claws or just make things more three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like very low relief sculpture.
I see.
So anyway, I started over and did that. And I did, to answer your question, I didn't do it in order because the second period, the Ordovician period, is 80 million years long. And it was really hard for me to get all of the information together so early. And so I did that close to the end.
Huh. And I understand that you traveled a lot for this project.
Well, yeah, I was
to different museums.
Anyway, yes. For example, when I was in England, I went to
the Natural History Museum there?
Yes. Mm. I couldn't remember what the name of it was exactly.
It's a fascinating, most fascinating museum. I've been there, yeah.
And they had the fossils really beautifully laid out for the earlier periods, which was what I was working on. Probably they don't have those dusty old displays anymore. It's probably all hands-on computer. But for me, it was just wonderful because I just spent a couple of days there drawing.
Ah. You know what I'm also fascinated by in regard to this project? The colors that you chose.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many beautiful pastel colors and bright reds. How did you decide on that?
The background colors are basically maybe slight exaggerations of the matrix in which the fossils were found. And the matrix is basically the dirt or rock that the fossils were found in. So, for example, the Devonian period, which is the rock that we find around here, is pretty gray slate. So that period, if you see it in the museum, is quite gray. But the another period might have a lot of red rock in it, and I really tried to vary the types of strata or rock. That when I saw something that was really bright in terms of matrix, I went for it because I wanted the piece to have a lot of different colors, not just be all gray.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's really a gorgeous piece. During this long period that it took you to create this, did you ever go back and say, oh, I did this wrong. I have to do this over in regard to color or, you know, what you had depicted?
Yes. In fact, during that five-year period, there were more paleontological discoveries. So, for example, there in the very earliest period, it had been originally thought that a lot of different species all appeared in a very short amount of time, and this was called the Cambrian explosion. But in fact, while I was working on the piece, a lot of these fossils were found earlier in China, so I added them in to those to earlier panels.
So is this why it took you so long? You were continuously making sure it was true to...
That was part of it. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It just mainly took me so long because it takes a long time to paint all that.
Oh, it's a tremendous project. So. It's just absolutely amazing that one person was able to really do this, I think. If you're just joining us, my guest is artist Barbara Page. We're talking about her project Rock of Ages, Sands of Time, which depicts the history of life and is permanently installed in the Museum of the Earth in Ithaca, New York. Now, did this project change you in any fundamental way as a person or an artist?
Well, yes. I mean, it was very exciting. For example, there was a book made of the project with color plates of the entire series. And it was really a new experience for me to work with a publisher and an editor, and that was a great deal of fun.
And Warren Ullman wrote the narrative in this book, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, each period has an introduction by Warren. It changed me also in the sense of it really was hard on my body.
Mm.
I spent so many hours kind of stooped over in the studio, and I'm normally a very active person. And I got really a lot of pain in my neck and so forth. So it made me realize afterwards that I had to stay on my regime of sports and yoga, or it was just really difficult. So since then, I've been much more conscientious about taking care of myself.
That's amazing, the correlation between really staying in shape in order to create art. People wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah, well, it's I am blessed with a lot of energy, but just moving paintings around, and it's definitely challenging.
Mm-hmm. So these panels were not on a, you know, what someone would think of as an artist working on an easel. You were actually having to do these stooped over?
I had them laid on a tilted table to work on. I put them on an easel when I was varnishing them for the final. I had to spray each panel four times with UV varnish to protect them from light. And then, but before that, I had to separate the surface from the varnish so you could remove the varnish if necessary.
Oh,
so there's a lot more work than might meet the eye.
Yeah, there's a lot of technical stuff.
Yeah.
Connected to the creativity part, isn't there?
Exactly. All of which I had to figure out. I didn't know all of this when I started.
Yeah, that's what you said in your biography, that you actually learned along the way some of these skills.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now, many of your paintings with great titles like Losing My Bearings and Lost at Sea, they look like aerial photography to me. So how do you create these pieces? Is it from your imagination, or are you using photographs?
I have a pilot's license. So I actually learned to fly when my children were very young, and I think if my kids had done something like this, I would have been furious at them. But we were living in California, and I just had this opportunity to learn to fly, and I just really took to it, and I loved flying over the landscape. It was pretty easy not to get lost there because you had the Pacific Ocean on one side and the Sierras on the other. And I did stop flying when I went to graduate school, and it just got too difficult when I came back east, and it wasn't quite so interesting. So I have had this real love for flying, and I think it's actually what was the catalyst for my career as an artist, because before that, I had a totally ordinary life in the sense that none of us have ordinary lives, but it wasn't, I didn't really feel like I had anything to say. I was brought up before women's lib, so I didn't think about having a career. The fact that I could get in a plane and take off and be independent, and it was transforming for me. So I did feel at that point that I had something to say, and I'd always really loved drawing, and I'd never really done much painting, but I just have liked making marks. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I was always messing around outside making things, and I used to skate, so I was used to being in a big rink and making, at that time we did school figures, so I had to make patterns on ice and lay them on top of each other, so I was very aware of moving my body through space, and I think that drawing has the same kind of effect on kind of a smaller scale.
That's amazing. So Barbara Page, instead of finding a room of your own, you found a sky of your own.
I guess that's true. So I'm still very attracted. I'm very attracted to aerial perspective.
Uh-huh. And so your paintings are from memory from those flying sessions?
No.
Or did you take photographs?
No, I have some photographs, but also I fly around on my computer on TerraServer, which is kind of these old agricultural maps. In black and white, and I just use the patterns as a jumping-off point for these paintings.
Yeah, your paintings are amazing. They take you into such different worlds. Some of them look like they're under the water.
Yeah, well,
constellations.
Yeah, I guess when I'm talking about aerial perspective, it's kind of odd because I like to be at all different levels. Most people think horizontally, and I actually think vertically. You can see that in the strata of the piece that I did at the museum, or I've done paintings as if I were underwater, scuba diver, flat on the surface, looking up into the sky, but it's generally on a vertical plane instead of a horizontal plane. And I don't know why, but that's just, I think it's partly because I have always liked paintings that are very flat on the surface. I don't really like deep perspective that much. I'm not trying to make it a window in which, you know, which we're looking out of. It's more, I'm more interested in the abstract patterns and kind of using reality, but making it pretty abstract at the same time. So I have a lot of imagination. I use a lot of imagination superimposed on
reality. It does look like your own personal version of the passing of time in some ways. You know, rocks and stars. And I think your paintings are quite amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, you have a new exhibit called Missing the Forest for the Trees, which recently opened at the Museum of the Earth. Tell us about that.
As if I hadn't spent enough time looking at fossils, after I finished the piece, I decided to return to doing some watercolors. I'd done watercolors a lot earlier in my career, and I basically stopped for 10 years. But I really loved the fossils of petrified wood, and I felt like I didn't get much chance to use them in the piece because there was just so much to include. So I started thinking of them as shapes encased in a rectangle, and how I was going to frame the edges of these small pieces, which were mostly round, like as if you'd cut a tree off, a tree stump. That's basically what they are. I didn't want them to just hit you in the face as pieces of petrified wood. We think of wood as having rings. Mm-hmm. A lot of the watercolors that I've made of the petrified wood samples are from palms, which have a completely different structure. So actually, when you look at these, I don't really care whether you see them as pieces of petrified wood. They could be maybe bone scans or plans for lost cities. It was basically a jumping off space to use very interesting kind of natural shapes and really elaborate the edges of the pieces and so forth. So they were a jumping off point for me. And doing these pieces is kind of a time to reflect. They take quite a while to do. And it's nice to be quiet in my studio and just be able to think. And I kind of want to bring that experience to somebody looking at them, that they don't really know what they're looking at, and it's just a quiet time to be together with this painting that has quite a bit of complexity.
And you found that using watercolors was the best way to depict this.
Yes, I think it's just there's a certain quality of light in watercolors and also flow, and it's easier to maybe mimic some of the flow of nature, whereas oils, you're in their usual state, you're kind of having to push around.
How'd you come up with the title, Missing the Forest for the Trees?
That was actually the museum's title for the exhibit because they planned the exhibit before I got involved in it.
So it almost sounds to me like you're trying to get people to focus on the intimate. And
yes.
You know.
Yes.
That's very interesting. Now, you sent me a copy of a new proposal that you have written up for the Center for Book Arts in New York using discarded and obsolete materials. Talk to us about that.
I've gotten interested in artists' books, which are basically, I don't really know what an artist's book is because it seems like it can be anything that has pages. And so I've been trying to make artist's books using old papers and not necessarily the normal container for a book. So, for example, I did one recently called The Cost of Living, which is all my old canceled checks from 1980 to 1982, because we don't get our canceled checks anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're all folded on a ring, and they look like a cake, a cake with a hole in the center, with all the what do you call it? The bank stamps, cancellations. You can see all the cancellations on the edges. And then I put them in a cake tin and put little tiny roses on top. So it was just a way of using something old, and we kind of, I think it's because of sometimes feeling broke. And
but nowadays,
you know, especially. You try to just do the best you can. I don't know. So, but they're in a cake tin that has roses on the top. But so that sort of shows you that an artist's book, to me, can be most anything. And what I've been doing recently is I've been using the discarded cards, charge cards from library books that I've read, that I've borrowed over the years. And because I have my journals, I'm able to recreate a lot of my reading history. And I realized that actually my reading history is kind of a social history of the period in which I've lived. So, for example, when I was in California, I was there during the time of all the upheavals in the late 60s, early 70s. So I marched in People's Park, and I read Soul on Ice. And so it started to be, when I started arranging these chronologically, I realized that you could tell when Women's Lib hit me, or when I learned to fly, or when I was really interested in gardening, or when I did the piece for the Museum of the Earth, just because of the kinds of books that I was reading during that time. Mm-hmm. You can also see the children's books that I read, the books that I read to my children, and the books that my grandchildren now I have the opportunity occasionally to read to them. So I don't, it's kind of like the beginning of the piece, and I don't know how many of them I'll use because it may just get too complicated and I'll probably have to cut it down and shape it and so forth because... Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like it's moving along that same line of the passing of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you are still obsessed with, obviously.
Yes.
Now, are you one of those people that bemoans the fact, I mean, you're talking about the library cards that they don't have anymore in books, the fact that people don't write letters anymore? Because I read artists' letters and writers' letters, and it's a fascinating way to look into people's lives.
Yes, I think, well, I guess the journal is now what, you know, a lot of people do journals, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly regret writing letters. I mean, I still have to do it occasionally, and I feel like I can hardly write anymore since I use the computer all of the time. Uh-huh. But it's just one of those things that we're going to lose, and maybe I'll be using letters for my next piece. Who knows?
that's what reminded me of that, indeed.
Yeah.
Do you work with students at all, and what do you say to artists who are up and coming? And
I actually haven't taught for about 10 years, and I only did it briefly, so mostly nowadays I'm just working on my own or talking with other people. Mm-hmm. I participated in a program this spring with... It was a pilot program with the New York Foundation for the Arts about making people making artists more aware of how to bring their careers along. And it was interesting because people were at all stages of their careers. So it was that was really nice to be able to exchange thoughts with other artists. And it made me realize how important that is. And I really want to make that a bigger part of my life, because you do tend to get isolated in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think you would be very inspiring to people.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think one of the problems is you just, as I've been saying all along, you just so feel the pressure of time. I really find it hard to find the time to do my own work with all of the other
Yeah. Well, Barbara Page, we have run out of time, and I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, well, I really appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.